Well, good evening. A wonderful Shabbat to you all. It's my pleasure to be with you on Yada Yada Radio. We have the Larianator here. We have JB and we have Kirk. So we have the whole cast of characters. Good evening, fellas.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
Yeah. We, by the way, are not being sexist here in the fact that there are four guys. And there are lots of women listening, not only in the chat room, but listening online. If one of you ladies wants to participate in the show, we would more than be receptive to that. But it is interesting that we do have a group of guys. Kirk, can I put you on the spot here just a moment, if you wouldn't mind? You were just two, and I did all day today, so it wouldn't be anything different, right?
No.
I was picking on you today, man.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. You seem to be having fun with it, so I just kept right on going. We were only two words from completing your list of the big three religious words that don't have any basis in the Hebrew lexicon.
Mm-hmm.
And since this topic happens to be Larry's favorite, and we happen to be on Larry's favorite word.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you guys, if we go ahead and finish that, do you have your notes handy, Kirk?
I do, as a matter of fact. Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you mind if we continued with it? And Larry, this is your favorite word. Because you really like worshiping God, you are. I know you're the guy we have to drag from the precipice of religion.
Larry's all about it.
All about religion.
Well, and now we're just hanging down the parking lot, you know.
My main goal in life is to trash Yahweh's character.
It's far worse than just misunderstanding who he is. It's really about demeaning him.
Sure.
And demeaning his purpose. It's about inverting his whole purpose and trashing his message, putting it upside down. We have systematically on Shattering Myths gone through the eight words that are translated praise, the 10 words that are translated prayer, and now we're on the 4 words that are translated worship. Yeah, although I have already made a mistake. I said they were the words that were translated. They weren't translated.
No, they were just changed.
They were stood on their head.
Yeah,
no question.
All these
mistakes seem to happen, and they always happen in the favor of religiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one example that I noticed is that Lisa Bonet and I have been having quite a conversation about all the gods that were codified in a place called Petra.
Yeah.
And Yahweh actually mentions it. Talking about the other side of the mountain. That other side of that mountain is Petra.
Yeah.
And you got every type of sun worship that you can imagine found in that place.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you know it, they change Shimon's name to Petrus.
Yeah, wouldn't you know it. Hey, wouldn't you know the number one god that's worshipped on that side of that mountain? You know the principal deity?
I think it's Ishtar, isn't it?
Nope. Ishtar is prominent there. The primary deity
Amun
that is
Ra at war, I think.
Sen.
Baal?
Sen. Sen.
Sen.
Sen.
That, Sen. He was there, too. I just wasn't sure who was the primary.
Yeah, Sen. Sen is the Babylonian moon god. And it strikes me... We were talking about letters just a bit ago in the Shattering Myths show, and the letters that have been added to and subtracted from Hebrew to make to stay at 22 letters after removing the hard G sound and Gaza and Gomorrah and Gentile. That hard G sound, gone, which is the eighth letter of the Hebrew alphabet, the original alphabet, that was actually shown as an infinity sign. For it to go away, they had to take the shin, which is the SH sound, and make two letters out of it, and to create an S sound. But they already had an S sound. That's the Shemek, is the S sound. So guess what the second variation of the Shin, S-H-I-N, is called in Hebrew, in Babylonian Hebrew?
Sin.
Yeah.
Sin.
Yeah.
Sin. Now, guess where? Now, I do not claim to be a scholar. Don't claim to have studied this. I'm just giving you some connections that come to mind here. So they created this letter, and they named this letter after the prominent god, Sin, of the Babylonian moon god that's on the side of that mountain. Now, the operative word in the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone is Nasha, right? N-A-S-A. And it means... It has one of two different meanings. One is to lift up, to advocate, to promote, to accept. And the other meaning, and that is when it's written with a sin. But if it was written with the original Shemek, or if it was originally a Shin, one of the two original letters, it doesn't mean that at all. It means to deceive. It means to mislead. It means to delude. And so very different concept. And it talks about deluding somebody and deceiving them to the point that you forestall their life. You lead them into darkness. And so here was a way for rabbis to eliminate their own most egregious crime from the statements etched in stone by changing the letter, and they changed the letter to model the name of the dominant god on the side of that mountain.
Yeah, it's shocking. She was doing a work where she was talking. Yahweh was talking about all the different religions, and he kept bringing up this place, Petro. I mean, that's the place he was bringing up.
Right.
And it's pretty shocking to me how involved the rabbis really were in all this. I mean, mostly all of it.
Yeah, she's Lisa's very smart. She's into research. And if it's the Lisa that I'm thinking about, she's racially Yehudim. And she's one of the Yehudim who is, and I think I can say it on this show, I probably can't say it on Shattering Myth, that is pissed off that so many religious rabbis misled her for so many years. And part of her motivation to research and learn is to help others so that they won't be misled.
And I got to tell you, see, some of this work, the way it all, you know, the beginning and the end,
right?
How Yahweh says the end's going to mirror the beginning. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And when Jerusalem is attacked, from what I can gather from work that she's been looking at, we've been exchanging information, it'll be attacked from there, from the east.
Oh, absolutely.
And from that direction. And it's just a wild breakdown.
Yeah, they're not coming. They're not coming through Lebanon. They're not coming through principally they're going to trample down Jordan, which of course is the West Bank, which is due east of Israel. They're going to come via Syria and pass right through Jordan as if it didn't exist.
Yeah, it's just a wild situation. When I started looking at Petra, and I was saying, where do I hear that all? It's Petros. Yeah, sure. They took Shimon and named him, you know, after this place that's just filled with pagan deities. Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable.
But I didn't mean to jump in there.
It's those connections which I think are important. You know, on this program, there isn't anybody listening to this program that doesn't know who Yahweh is. There isn't anybody listening to this program that doesn't understand what the covenant's about. There's no one in this program listening tonight that didn't answer Yahweh's invitation to attend Pesach Matzah B'Kodem. Everybody here is a part of the family. So as part of the family, for us to investigate these kinds of connections and how religions mislead, that is the kind of thing that this program is devoted to.
I mean, there couldn't have been a bigger accident. I mean, really. It's like naming, you know, it's right along the lines of going, okay, Yahweh's Lord, and and the upright pole is the upright pole is really a cross, and his words are named after Biblia, the sun goddess, and on. So then we have a legitimate disciple. And so we've got to name him after some pagan heap of ruin. I mean, yeah. Really.
Yeah, I started today to translate the rest of Habakkuk, because a cursory reading of it seems like it's transitioning from condemning Paul to condemning the nation most influenced by Paul.
Really?
That would be America.
Yeah.
And that's just my sense of it. I want to verify that that's correct. But I also wanted to share that yesterday, I had, I've done 3,000 radio interviews. Yesterday may have been one of my all-time favorites. I did an hour and a half with Louis Free. Louis Free is a guy that I did a whole bunch of interviews with back in the days I was doing Prophet of Doom. And, of course, he wants to talk about Islam, and I'm happy to, talk about Islam if that's what he wants. But I won't be restricted to Islam anymore. So he's a non-religious Jew. And so I'm constantly asking him about the Torah. I said, what was Moshe's response to Yahweh when Yahweh asked him to share liberate his children? We go into all this kind of detail, and it led yesterday in the middle of the program to questioning Paul, and we spent the last half of the program demonstrating emphatically that Christianity was a false religion, that Paul was a complete and utter fraud. And this whole time he says, I probably just run off half my audience, but it's okay because what you're saying is irrefutable.
Wow.
Oh, he said that?
Said that? He says, what you're saying, nobody
can argue. It is irrefutable.
It's irrefutable. So be it. The program doesn't have limits on it that says we can only refute those things which everybody agrees to refute. We're not taking a popularity contest here. So it was a most interesting show. All right, Kirk, that is a little bit of a departure, but you were talking about the first of the Hebrew words that is misrepresented as worship. What was that word, and what did we? Can you give us a quick summary of what we talked about this morning?
Well, you pronounce it, I think, shakal or something similar to that. I pronounce it as best I can, but it's the it means the primary meaning is to sink, with additional meanings of a pit, low, and to bow. And as a pit that's dug into the ground for the purpose of trapping someone, which relates to what you were just speaking of, and to go down or sink down into a pit.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is that, and I shared this morning, and Larry, you're very familiar with this word because you've sent it to me maybe 7 or 8 times. It's the word that is most often used to convey the concept of worship in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And the word that is pointed to, that your resources will take you to, is diacritically marked so that it does have as a connotation bowing down. But if you look at the word right below it in every lexicon, the word that is, or some, it's right above it, written with exactly the same 3 Hebrew letters. It means to respond. It means to offer testimony regarding something you have seen, being a witness.
Something we do constantly. Something we do constantly. Yeah.
Right. And so it speaks not of people worshiping Yahweh. It's of people responding by being a witness to Yahweh's testimony.
That's right.
Now, if that's worship, I'm a complete idiot. I have no way to get to worship from there. It is, at the very most, it's the closest thing to worship you could possibly get is that you could say that after witnessing Yahweh's testimony, that we're responding to him. That's the closest you could possibly get, and that's a million miles away. But I think that the primary meaning of the word is not that at all. I think the primary meaning of the word is that after witnessing Yahweh's testimony, we respond as witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what we're doing. It's what we all do.
It's what this show's about.
It's the only response that anyone who has come to know Yahweh can do. It's what we're all desirous of doing. You come to know Yahweh as He is. You find out He is really likable. You come to understand what He's offering. It's extraordinarily wonderful and beneficial, and you want to share it. That's what the word means. So what are the three letters?
Well, we have a shin. It starts out with a shin, which is the teeth,
right?
Skin. And we're talking nourishment there and words. And then we have the chet, which is the fence. Can separate, can protect, as well as keep things out, or it can also keep something in.
Right.
And we have the hay, which is the person standing up, engaged, ready to walk at least, if not walking, certainly ready to walk, and with their hands up reaching up to Yahweh, as the way, more
okay.
times than not.
May I offer then a letter-by-letter depiction
Absolutely.
Of the word consistent with its primary meaning, which is to respond as a witness by providing testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are beholding, looking up to what Yahweh had to say, His words, His shin, are set apart.
Yeah. That's absolutely fine.
That's what the letters convey, isn't it? Those who are
absolutely.
Paying attention to what Yahweh and are engaged in what Yahweh is saying, saying His words, shin, hey, those who are paying attention to His words are set apart.
If Yahweh wanted somebody to be kneeling down, He would have done it. And He would have used it there.
Right. The chet means to be protected. The whole idea of it was a division. It's
mm-hmm.
it's the demarcation line. You're either set apart on one side to human institutions, or you're set apart on the other side by Yahweh. You're protected by human institutions, you're protected by the covenant. That's it. So don't the letters of the word, even if you were to say, all right, the person who is engaged paying attention is protected when they are a witness. You could say, and speaking the word of Yahweh. You could also translate it that way, couldn't you?
That would be true, too. And just backwards, but that's absolutely. You can go back and forth.
All right, so we don't find worship there.
No.
What's the next one?
The next one was Sagad, as best I can pronounce it, and it's to fall down. It's, the first primary meaning is to prostrate, to fall down on the knees and face in homage. And that's a Shemek, a Gimel, and a Delit.
Okay, so it begins with a Shemek, the straight S sound.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
You know, looks like a it looks like a you know, the thorn bush.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the Shemek, which I think is the original sin, which is the thorn. There is a whole lot of things that are associated with it. It does mean to pierce, to grab, but to pierce. To shield, because the thorn bush is used as a form of a shield. It really looks today like a modern-day telephone pole, doesn't it?
Yeah, that would be accurate, right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. So the first letter is the Shemek. What's the second?
It's a gimel, walking, a foot walking.
Okay.
To carry.
Right. Yeah. To move
together.
To go in a direction to
move
walk
to,
towards one way or another. Okay.
Yes, exactly. And of course, the delet is the doorway, and that would be the doorway through Passover.
Yep.
In my opinion, it can be any doorway, but it's the doorway to Passover.
Did Yosha walk to Passover to become the Passover lamb? He carried the upright pole, didn't he, right to the place that he became the Passover lamb, didn't he? And
indeed.
was he wearing a crown of thorns at the time?
Crown of thorns. Mm-hmm.
So is the word conveying what he did?
Absolutely it is.
And if you and I wanted to be protected, would we also walk through that doorway?
It's the only way.
Was the sacrificial lamb of Yahweh also denoted in association with a thorn? And
mm-hmm.
Besides the crown of thorns, was there another time that the sacrificial lamb of Yahweh was associated with the thorn?
Well, he was pierced.
Well, he was pierced. Oh, yeah, he was absolutely pierced on that pole. That's true. But what about the time that wanted to affirm the covenant with Yishak?
Mm-hmm.
And just before Yishak was slain as the sacrifice, Yahweh says, "No, I'll provide the sacrifice." Mm-hmm. And at that time, you had
the
lamb caught in a what?
Caught in a thorn bush. Absolutely.
Now, why do you think Yahweh bothered to tell us that he was caught in a thorn bush?
Well, I mean, he's teaching you the story, and he's making sure all the points connect so that you can't possibly miss it if you're looking for it.
If you're looking for it, you'll find it, right? If you're not looking for it, you'll read right over it. If you're looking for it, you'll find it. Exactly. And so Yahweh is only going to instruct those who are actually looking for his instruction. Everybody else is going to miss it.
Yeah. I mean, he said if you look for it, if you knock on the door, you'll find
right.
it. You'll come
so
through.
So the sacrificial lamb that was caught in the thorn bush of the day that the covenant was ratified, of the one that was pierced for us on the doorway to life of Passover, who was wearing the crown of thorns on his head, if we walk through the doorway that he provided, we will be protected.
Yes.
Is that what the letter is? Didn't I just read the letters?
Yes.
I think that's a rather important doorway to walk through, right?
I think it's the most important doorway to
walk
through.
Yeah, the most important doorway to walk through. All right, so how do we get worship out of that work?
You got to work.
How many people are worshiping when they're on their feet?
No.
How do you associate a thorn bush with worship? I know how to associate with the sacrificial lamb. I don't know how to associate with worship. I don't know how to associate feet with worship.
Well,
part of the human body did Yosha wash?
Washed his feet.
Feet. And isn't what he did on Pesach and Matzah to purify us?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's association with the feet there. It's the only part of the human body we know that he washed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I can't get... I just can't get to worship there.
No, you have to be, as Larry says, you've got to really want to deceive someone because this is not there. So you not only you change all the letters, you change all the words, and you just hide everything from everybody.
Yeah, and it's not even just that. It's if you put worship in, like nearly all those places, unless he's talking about a bunch of pagans.
Mm-hmm.
It's so out of context. Up to the mountain to make a declaration, as an example, and they went up to the mountain to worship. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, and Larry, I'd ask you a question. There's two people in Yahweh's name, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are they prostrate?
No, they're standing up.
Son of a gun. That one hand. The big hand that's in Yahweh's name. His hand. Is it pushing people down, or is it in a way that
it's
can only
lifting
be
them up?
Oh, yeah.
Which would coincide with his words where he says, "I'll constantly kneel down to benefit you and lift you up,"
right,
and
right,
who
right.
lifts up, and on and on. There, we only have hundreds of verses that verify that. Never once does he say, "I'm a religious deity that needs you to kneel down, prostrate to me." And of course, we know who needs that. That would be Satan, because he wants to be worshipped as God, and
exactly.
He wants to change God's nature doing it.
Yeah. So being prostrate would be in conflict with the very letters that comprise Yahweh's name,
mm-hmm.
bowing down.
No, absolutely. That's proof enough right there. I mean, it's outrageous. I can't, this is another reason where you know, in when they're walking in for Sukkah at the end of the Battle of Mogi Down, mm-hmm. in Zechariah, mm-hmm. Your translation doesn't seem to fit anyone else's translation, and yours is the only one that appears could be right. Because all the rest of the translations have people that are coming to bow down to Yahweh once a year. For what? You know, for,
yeah. And the one that I have has the word translated based upon its actionable root, its primary meaning, which is to respond, providing testimony based upon what they have witnessed.
Yeah, and it's also what you say here, and I'm just going to kind of read this.
Please.
And this is in Zechariah 14:16. The whole existing remnant from all Gentile nations who came to attack Jerusalem in accord with the multitude of Allah, with repeated and repetitious prostrations, that's perfect.
Got no problem.
In accord with their king, will celebrate Yahweh's festival feast of Sukkah. And what you say here is there appears to be a group that was forced by their nation to go out and attack Jerusalem, and they took sides the other way. You know, they might have been forced to go, but they sided with Jerusalem and the people in it, as opposed to siding with the satanic king that has sent them. And if you go the other route, what you have to do is say that, and once a year people come up and bow down to Yahweh. That's just, it's not in keeping with who Yahweh is, not even a little bit. So, you know.
No, it's the last thing that God wants. Now, there is a group of people that are going to bow down to him, and we might as well acknowledge that. It's spoken of in Yashayah, where every knee is going to bow, and it's clearly that, and if you read it in context, he's talking about leaders, kings, presidents. He's talking about religious pontiffs. He's talking about leaders of people, and he's the whole argument is how disgusted he is regarding the leaders of human institutions. And he is
he's going to give them one last public appearance. I understand that.
Right, and they're going to have to bow down before the children of the covenant and before Yahweh, and that humiliation is part of the process of judging them. They made people bow before them, and now Yahweh is making them bow before us. You know, so there are a lot of people that are going to bow down before Yahweh. It's just that if you're bowing down before him, you're being judged.
Yeah. If you're judged, you're guilty already. Your evidence is already against you.
Okay, you've got one or two more, Kirk?
Well, I have one more. There's a bunch of Greek words used. This one is minor use. However, it's one of the things that the King James uses and the modern translators use. It also they translated it worship, and it's a thob or ahtsab type of thing. It's Atasab, I guess, and it means pain, to be in pain from grief or heavy toil, pain, suffering, and sorrow.
Well, that's a...
And,
you know, a lot of people... By the way, I've approached Yahweh in pain. Mm-hmm. I've approached Yahweh in sorrow. I was sorry that I was political, that I was an evangelist, that I was religious. I'm sorry that I misled others. It pained me to know that was part of my prior life. I'm no longer sorrowful about it. I'm no longer pained by it. But I was when I first came to realize that what I had done was wrong.
Yeah. Everybody is, to one degree or another.
Yeah. I was mad at myself. I was disappointed in myself. Now, not anymore. And it's not because I have changed in my view of that. I was wrong. It's just that after a while, when you're with Yahweh, after you've kind of gone through that cleansing process, and you said, "I'm sorry, I was really wrong. That was really bad of me, I won't make that mistake again." Once you've done that, it's just like walking up to a loving parent. Okay, you've acknowledged what you did was wrong. Let's go on.
Yeah.
not, we're not going to, a loving parent doesn't rub your nose in it for the rest of your life. You just move on, and you enjoy the positives. And you, and in some ways, you actually look back and you smile and say, oh, man, thank God I'm not there anymore.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So let's look at the letters that comprise the word.
Sure. This one is an ayin or ain, an a, and a tasad, a man resting. And
okay, the ain is an I, which talks about perspective and understanding and observation.
Mm-hmm. Observation. The tasad, of course, is a man resting, like on Shabbat.
Right.
He's sitting there resting, waiting, anticipation, I suppose. And you could also say... the next one, of course, is the family home, the house, the bayit.
Okay.
So all that that encompasses the family home, a shelter. You're sheltered by them. You can rest in the family home if you've observed and understood and grew from knowledge to understanding, I guess.
Yeah.
If your
observations and your perspective are correct regarding the signpost along the way. Then you can rest and relax while Yahweh does whatever is required.
Yes, he does the work. Yeah,
to let you into his home. That you don't get into his home because you've done something to earn it.
No.
Yahweh takes care of it. We can rest in the knowledge that he is responsible for settling us in his home, and in his home we're going to rest and relax. And it's all about our willingness to. The eyeball, observe, pay attention to his signs along the way, and to view everything from his perspective. And that perspective is that not much is required of us.
No. You know, this whole exercise was just eye-opening, of course, but it was like, how do you use those? I know they're emotive words, and, you know, it's like apple pie and baseball and, you know, and God bless America, and everybody goes, yeah, 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 you know, wow, wow, wow. So, but you cannot translate all these things as praise. You cannot translate all those words as pray. And it's just totally deceptive. I mean, totally. There's nothing in that to draw that conclusion that you would translate it that way. These people who translate it are not that stupid.
Yeah, well, let me give you an example. The triangular face on the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet that some of the religious sources that are available to us say means ox. Is there any way to get to ox with a triangular face?
No, we talked about that from an artistic standpoint. The an ox, I mean, the cow, whole cow family is drawn with squares and rectangles. Sheep and goats you can do with a triangle, and horses are with a kite shape if you want to do their faces. So it's not, no, you can't get there that way.
You just can't get there that way. So
no,
they had to disregard the shape of the letters to get there, to corrupt the meaning, to make it the bull, which is the antithesis of Yahweh, as opposed to the ram, which is the symbol of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, to misrepresent the words that have been corrupted to praise, prayer, and worship, they had to ignore the original alphabet and the meanings conveyed by the symbols of that original alphabet.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a pretty out-and-out corruption right there.
Yeah.
When you got a ram, that becomes Satan's symbol, the bull.
Right, exactly.
But I would tell you, and Kirk, you've spent a lot of time on this. I've spent a lot of time on this, looking up the depictions of original Hebrew characters, and I have not found a site, not one site, that renders it anything other than ox, except when I kept on looking at them, and they kept on saying ox's head, like they were all parroting one another, and I know that the ox is the bull, it's the symbol of Satan. I said, that doesn't look like an ox to me, but there is a symbol associated with Yahweh that he could incorporate into Ab and El, Father and God, that would make a great deal of sense, and that would be the ram's head, the ram's horn, and the sacrificial lamb. And that made perfect sense, and so I just completely disregarded ox, and I said, that's not an ox. I can use my own eyes and my own head. That's a ram.
Yeah. And you're dealing with the simplest shapes because these are all symbols. It's like drawing a, it's like when you draw a face, if you want it to be universal, you draw a circle and two eyes and a line, and you get an automatic face. And everybody knows, can read it. They know exactly what it is. I mean, so when you have, if you're going to draw an animal, then you draw it triangular or rectangular or kite-like. If you wanted a horse, you draw it like a kite. I mean, because how you do the horse's head. I mean, I teach it. I know. I mean, you can't get there any other way. So, you know, just some.
Observe and think all the way through. So Yahweh gave us this marvelous vocabulary that was specifically designed to communicate profound insights into his nature, and yet virtually everybody has corrupted it. In fact, right now, we are on the Shin. In Psalm 119, we're on the Shin. And the Shin is drawn as teeth. And so you really have three possibilities with the teeth. One is, represents spoken words. When you speak, you're putting your tongue in various places in your mouth next to your teeth so that you get either the closed mouth or the open mouth sound, and the letters are distinguished by where your tongue goes next to your teeth. But it's not only the words come out of our mouths when we with our teeth. Another concept of teeth is to we use them to chew, and so this would be nourishing words, right? That's how we bite into our food, nourishing words.
Nourishment.
When you bite through a piece of meat, particularly back in the days before they had knives and forks for that purpose, wouldn't you tear it away, cut it away, separate it? So they would be nourishing words and separating words.
And sharp.
Sharp. Division, separating words that are nourishing. So there's a lot of connotations of the teeth beyond that. Now, I would ask you one other thing. If you're meeting somebody that you enjoy being around, is there a show of teeth?
No, you don't do that. Well, there's a smile.
There's two ways to show teeth.
Yeah.
One is the snarl where you're
like a dog,
you know, like an animal bares its teeth for the express purpose of saying, "I'm going to attack you, I'm going to hurt you," and the other is a smile.
Yeah.
You know, people say, "Show me those pearly whites." You know, you have a really pretty smile. When they say a pretty smile, they're not looking at your lips; it's your teeth. So. Teeth would also, particularly when it's upper teeth, when you show upper teeth like that, it's almost always as part of a smile. So these are welcoming words that set apart and nourish. All of that is conveyed by the two teeth. And so everything we're going to read about the teeth is related to that. And we're on the second statement of this, which is 119-163. It's where we left off quite some time ago. And it was, I genuinely hate, shun, and am totally hostile to, all perfect, sane, which is the teeth, deceptive beliefs. This is shekur, misleading statements, lies, and vanity, all that is false, fraudulent, and unreliable. And in addition, I choose to consistently despise, denigrating, and that which is denigrating and disparaging. I totally love and genuinely love your Torah. So what he's telling us here is that the reason that he is opposed to that which denigrates and disparages is because he loves the Torah. And if somebody is out there disparaging and denigrating the Torah, he's not going to love them. Now, that's that whole Christian thing where when we're criticizing the religion, you're not very loving. You're judgmental. You're hateful. Yeah, that's right. I am judgmental. I am hateful. I hate anything that disparages the Torah. And your religion denigrates the Torah. So, yeah, I hate it. That's what Dode is saying here, that the proper response to something which disparages the Torah is to shun it, to be hostile to it, to despise it. Doesn't say we ought to love the denigrators. It doesn't say we ought to embrace the Torahless. It says no, shun them, be hostile to them, hate them. Now, I would tell you that there is only one source of information that would put you in a position where you would despise religious people, and that's the Torah. The Torah is the antidote for religion. It changes your whole mindset to it. You know, we began by saying that not too long ago, I said, you know, I used to be angry at myself, sorrow, sorry for what I had done when I was religious and political. And I learned that I was wrong by studying the Torah. The Torah is what awakened me to the realization that what I was doing was wrong. And so I hated what I had done. I think Dode here is saying that if you're an advocate of religion, or you're a political advocate, or you're a military advocate, he's opposed to you, because the Torah is opposed to you, because Yahweh was opposed to those people. And it's okay to be judgmental. In fact, it's good. It's okay to be hateful. In fact, it's good. Torah, here, we'll just go through the definition here of the words that comprise Torah. We haven't done it in a while. Torah means teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction. It is derived from Tow, T-W, which means you're signed, written, and enduring. Torah, T-W-R-H, just vocalized a different way, but Torah is way of treating people. And then T-W-R, meaning giving us the means to explore, to seek, to find, and to choose. And then the verb that, according to Yahweh, defines the word Torah, which is Yara, the source of instruction, teaching, guidance, and direction that flows from Yahweh, which is Tub. Now, Tub is the only word here, and Tob are the only two words that I'm going to add a letter that isn't in Torah. Two of the three letters are in Torah, so you'd say, well, why didn't you just stay to the plan and only include the letters that are in Torah? And the reason I'm doing that is, first, two of the three are in Torah, and Yahweh specifically says that his Torah is Tob. So if Yahweh tells us that his Torah is Tob, good, beneficial, healing, and two of the three letters are in Torah, I think you're going to be pretty comfortable including it in the definition, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Yahweh says Torah equals Tob. Okay. So
yeah,
Tob.
Good enough.
Yeah, good enough for me. I'm pretty simple in that regard. Tob. Good, pleasing, beneficial, favorable, healing, right, and that which causes us to be loved and to be acceptable as well as to endure, while Tob, same three letters, provides answers to facilitate our restoration and return, even our response and reply. And then Torah, T-H-W-R, purifying and cleansing us, thereby Tor, providing us with the opportunity to change our attitude, thinking, and direction. And the reason that there are so many of these words, and you won't find them if you just look up one of the two T's, is I considered both T's, since both T's are vocalized exactly the same way, and what you find is words which have identical meaning or very similar meaning that just have the one of the two T's, one or the other of the two T's. So I think that the reason that Yahweh chose to tell us that Dode was righteous and that he named this man beloved is because he said, I totally and genuinely, Ahab, love your Torah. I have fondly embraced it and have formed a close relationship with it in the call perfect, genuine and complete. So, folks, that's the dividing line between truth and lies, between relationship and religion. Do you hate those things that are opposed to the Torah, which means you'll hate political mantras, you're going to hate religion, and do you love the Torah? And do you hate the things that are opposed to the Torah because you love the Torah? If you do,
yes,
then your
yes.
viewpoint's the same as Dove's.
Yeah. You know, if you were an architect and owned a construction company and you built a home,
mm-hmm.
and you wanted to get to know the people in that home,
right?
How would that be a religion? You know,
yeah, I don't get it.
You know, that's the dividing line right there. As soon as people start to attach religion to the Creator, they've crossed the line. They're done.
If we follow Dode's behavior, particularly the behavior which Yahweh says, you know, Dode, you're going to have a timeout because that's not good. We're not going to endear ourselves to Yahweh. But if we follow Dode's advice, as Dode wrote Psalms that Yahweh inspired, that are included as part of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, which Yahusha himself cited, if we are following the advice of Dode as it is inscribed in the Psalms, what do you think the likelihood is that at that point we're doing something that Yahweh finds pleasing?
You're on total solid ground now.
Man, it can't get any better than that, can it?
No.
The only way you can get better than that is if we had a comprehensive word by word in Hebrew summation of everything Yahusha said and did. I suppose that would be 1% better. But, you know, if Dode's inspired by Yahweh, and he has to be inspired, I mean, the dude predicted crucifixion to a T and was an eyewitness to what occurred. A 1,000 years before it happened?
Right.
500 years before the torture was even invented? I'm going to go along with he was inspired by Yahweh to write these words because they're filled with prophecy and profound prophecy.
Yeah, and so you remember the reason we got into this is because we had a fellow that thought the word obey was used, you know, 17 times in the 119th.
Yeah.
You know, and of course it's not in there.
Not
because
in there. Not
the once. The perspective of the religious is always prayer, get on your knees, submission, obey, command, law. And, of course, these are the things that are intentionally drilled into everybody's head. It's very intentional, and it's designed to change the very nature of Yahweh and thus his offer. Can you imagine responding to an offer of any being, any individual, anyone that wanted to put you in a submissive, subservient relationship for all eternity, and you were going to be happy with this? Talk about self-deluded. I mean, really, it's the ultimate delusion. It's self-delusion. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And then to say you love it. I mean, what? Are you kidding?
The fellow that actually encouraged us to go into this didn't say that it was filled with obey, but he tried to make a transition from do to obey. He said, you know, there's 17 times word in the psalm where the word do is written. But what he failed to say is that virtually every time that the word do is written, it actually means to act upon or to engage in, and it's ascribed as Yahweh is the one who is acting and engaging.
Oh, that's right.
Oops.
That's right.
It's only Dode engaging and acting based upon what Yahweh has already done. You know, it's like us engaging in the process of study. Engaging in the process of sharing, engaging in the process of answering the invitations, engaging in the process of going on this voyage of discovery.
And when you're observing the Torah like we are tonight, you're actually doing something because you're thinking about it. You know, you've chewed the cud, so to speak. And you pointed out the other day the fact we don't speak Hebrew and just go right on through with the normal translations people are going to believe is because they've been thought out. Because we don't speak Paleo Hebrew, we had to slow down and look at those words, right? And
exactly.
And that's what it is that changes everything. the one thing that Yah was, you know, pretty consistent on is he would like us to seriously consider his words. That way you seriously consider the offer. That way you seriously consider how to uphold your end. You seriously consider the benefits. I think one of the most enlightening things in the 119th is Dode, you know, considering the benefits.
I mean, right.
People act like they're so selfless. Oh, I don't care that I'm a part owner in the universe. I mean, that'd be like saying I don't care.
The benefits. He's reveling in them.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And Dode is also acknowledging
here's a man that lives in reality. You know?
Right. He's right. Acknowledging his flaws, and he says, even with these flaws, I'm going to inherit the whole universe. Pretty cool. By the way, I just had a chance to look, Larry, where you were talking there, on the difference between the Teth and the Taw, which are now in Babylonian Hebrew, two different letters. And I was talking about them because of Torah, and I got the definition of Torah using both the Teth and the Taw. Do you know how, if there's any similarity, this is probably an unfair question for you, Kirk, but I wouldn't try it anyway. Do you know if there's any commonality to the way that the Teth and the Taw are drawn?
Well, yeah, you have bars that are crossing.
Mm-hmm. An X.
Both, they're marks. Yeah, this one can be an X.
Both are drawn with an X. That is the common denominator, and the Teth has an element in addition to the X. It has a circle around the X so that you get enclosed in the X. But they're both the both letters are conveyed with an X. We use the X today to convey two things. X marks the spot.
Yep.
X marks the spot. Man, you want to know the spot to look for guidance? You want to look for the greatest treasure in the world? X marks the spot. What's the first letter of Torah? X marks the spot.
Marks the spot. You know, that's
now, the next thing is, Kirk, if you want to know if something is legitimate. You know, when, I don't know if you ever watch Pawn Stars, and they have some historic document brought in, and they get all excited, but the way that they go about determining whether it's authentic is they have a handwriting expert come in and verify the signature.
Signature. Mm-hmm.
Put your X on the dotted line. In fact, a signature line is always designated by the X, and it conveys, even in Hebrew, signature. Now, would you think that you'd have a slightly better likelihood of authenticity on the Torah being from Yahweh, approved by Yahweh, if he signed it?
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're saying is, X marks the spot, I have signed this instruction. I've signed this guidance. I signed the Torah. X marks the spot. This is my signature.
Yeah. It's also a fiduciary mark. You know, there's a fiduciary mark. That's the old Italian guy. It was a bombardier's thing for marking the spot, the target area, was most important to come in contact with. And it's, so it just you can just go on and on and on and on. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, crosshairs. If you're crosshairs. Looking through
absolutely.
A scope, you want to align something up in the crosshairs. That means that you're properly aligned. You're aiming correctly. Your view is an alignment is accurate, and it can be even with a telescope. The crosshairs, it's an alignment. All of that is conveyed. And when you speak of X marks the spot and of the signature, what signature is there in the Torah? There's only one that I'm aware of.
Yahweh.
So he begins the Torah with a letter that means signature. X marks the spot. Proper perspective. This will provide the proper alignment.
I mean, he did that's write his name thing. All over it.
Yeah, that's a pretty outstanding way to begin. And then the second letter means that this is my signature. X marks the spot to be increased. To be made secure in the family home, to find yourself added to.
To.
Yeah. But increased, empowered, and to be made secure and grow in a family home. That's the wa. And then the next letter is the rosh. So everybody's not growing. Everyone's not being made secure. Everyone's not finding the signature, and everyone doesn't realize that X marks the spot. There's only those people who are rosh.
Mm-hmm.
Paying
observant.
Attention. Yeah, observant.
Studying.
Using their eyes to read, using their ears to hear, using their minds to process the information, and the rosh, in this case, engage. They pay attention to Yahweh. They reach up to Him. That's what they do as a result of all of this. That's Torah, based
mm-hmm.
upon the letters. So it's a means for humankind to engage and walk with Yah, to be lifted up by Yah. So long as they are observant, paying attention, listening to what Yah has to say, reading what He has to say, thinking about what He has to say, those individuals will be enriched and protected because of the fact that this is the spot where you find Yahweh's signature, his endorsement.
Well said.
Oh, that's Torah. So it's a pretty good word.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the next statement is sevenfold way of affirmation. During the day, I radiate your light according to your righteous and vindicating means used to achieve justice and resolve disputes. So we have either Sheba or Shaba, depending
mm-hmm.
on how it's vocalized, which is sevenfold and a way of affirmation. They benefit as a result of an abundant promise related to the number seven, a vow and a sworn oath associated with seven and the Shabbat. During the day, I radiate your light. Halal. Well, we spoke about that. Halal is one of those words that is communicated
mm-hmm.
praise, right?
It's praise to shine.
Right. But in this case, it's I radiate your light. That's the verbal, the actionable meaning. Means to shine, to primary meaning, to shine, to radiate light.
To reflect.
Yeah, to reflect light. And it's a person who is approaching the shepherd. Hey, Lamed, Lamed. According to approach your righteousness and vindication, Sedek. By the way, here, righteousness, we haven't done this one in a while. Righteousness
no.
and vindication, the means to being called perfect. Now, Dod was called righteous by Yahweh, correct?
Yes, he was.
The Hebrew word for righteous begins with the TS sign, the Tazdeh.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't the Tazdi the person laying down?
Resting guy again. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that? Isn't there an association with that resting guy and Shaba as in Shabbat?
Shabbat indeed.
Yeah. Well, there's a tie-in there, isn't there? And,
oh, yeah.
And doesn't the TS sign, isn't this the, there are two words that begin with a TS that are used by Yahweh. In fact, there's three. I'm going to give you the three words that are used that have been, that incorporate the TS that are used. I bet they're used 1,000 times between the three of them. Anybody ever heard of Zion?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah, Zion doesn't begin with a Z, does it?
No.
No. Begins with the Tazdeh, doesn't it? And Zion, the TS word, means signposts along the way, doesn't it?
Yes.
So we have the first letter. You're resting and reflecting on the signposts along the way. TS. And let me give you another word that has the TS. We just did vindication, which is tzedak, the TS.
Mm-hmm.
How about Eretz? What is the last letter in Eretz?
It's a TS.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in the promised land, aren't you resting?
You are, indeed. That's yep.
Yep. So the TS sound is in Eretz. It's in Sadak. It is in Zion. Mm-hmm. All that TS sound. So that's the first letter of Sadak. The... the second letter of Sadak is a D.
Delete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the delete. That's a doorway, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So the resting individual, in association with the Shabbat, is introduced to the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And
the pathway home. Yeah.
Okay. And what about the Q?
The Q is the sun coming up on the horizon.
Yeah.
Start of a new day.
So you're going to be immersed in the light, right? How does Yahweh make us look perfect? Sadak?
He eliminates all the darkness.
How does he do that? By shining his
light
on us.
Covered in the Ruach. That's,
right.
That's a new outfit there. I will say this, though. You know, you see the people that, of course, I see a lot of this because I'm on social media, and people are going to say the same thing that are, on FB and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I got, 2,000 people on my page. Okay, very few of them family. And so when I'm reading on this homepage, which is anything posted by anybody, you see so much of this, oh, I praise you, oh, Lord, and then people type underneath it, amen, 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 like little dumb monkey parrots. And it's kind of a strange thing because, even if I think the world of somebody, I don't walk through my home saying, oh, I praise you. I mean, it's a weird self-delusion. It's strange.
Right.
It's not the kind of thing that is real. And yet, if we're reflecting
light
this light.
Is light real?
Light's very real.
Are signs
most
real?
Yes,
along
they are.
The way.
But what
are doorways
what
real?
We're, and yes, they are.
Right.
And what we're
real.
Reflecting is his words. We're reflecting
right.
his words.
Now,
which
I
want real.
To tell you how powerful all this is, Larry, just to how real all of this is. Halal, we came to the conclusion, means, because of its verbal root, means to radiate light, to reflect light. Correct?
Right.
He just
right.
used
right.
this. He just used the verb, halal, to reflect light. And it's not just any light. It's individuals approaching and reflecting the light of the shepherd, because that's how halal is written. And then he says, according to law, another shepherd again, what? TSDQ. The signposts on the doorway to light. That's what Sadak means. It's the signposts on the doorway to light.
To light, yeah.
So didn't he just define halal for us and tell us, yeah, you guys figured it out. That is correct. And didn't he just explain the process of vindication? Since Sadak means vindication, didn't he just explain the process of vindication? Follow the signpost mm-hmm. through the doorway to the light?
Yeah. Where there's light, there's no darkness.
So how can our definitions of these words be anything but accurate when the letters themselves confirm that is the very process that Yahweh was using? He's telling us the signposts along the way provide the doorway to the light. And that, my friends, is the meaning of vindication and righteousness from Yahweh's perspective. Sadak. And we get there through halal by individuals who approach the shepherd. H-L-L. And then you've got Shabbat. Here, the sevenfold way of affirmation. S-H, the word that's nourishing,
mm-hmm.
that's separating, right?
Mm-hmm. And appears to be.
Provides the access to the doorway. Not to the doorway, to the family. B.
Well, there's a doorway. There's a doorway in that in the bayah, too. I mean, so, yes,
that's
the doorway
right.
to
well,
the
there
family
is. That
home,
is true.
To the family
but it's
home.
The, yeah, the words, the nourishing words, provide access to the family for, and it's not just any family, it's the family of the Almighty, the family of the Father, because it's Ellen.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, there's no reason to change your pronunciation to mine. I have the Moshe syndrome. And I'm delighted that I have the Moshe syndrome, because Yahweh chose somebody to convey his testimony who did not pronounce words very well. And so I have gone from being being conscious of the fact and really being embarrassed by the fact that I don't pronounce all the words accurately. So when I hear you trying to copy the way I'm saying it, please don't do that.
Well, no,
and then oddly enough, we have the other halal, which is still reflecting a light. It's just it's just the wrong light, you know.
Yes,
so,
correct. That's
you
right.
know, it can be used halal ben shakar, and
that is
and
correct.
All the sun worship, and
that
it's
is
a
right.
shiny object, and isn't it neat? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Matter of fact, and the shepherd's staff, that crooked end of the shepherd's staff, does the Pope carry it around?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and can't you use that to grab somebody by the neck and to drag them in the wrong direction,
yeah,
and to preclude them from fleeing you?
You can hurt them with it too,
right? And doesn't the doesn't it also just indicate man taking a stand? Right. So
yeah, I could do that.
There's
sure.
there's a negative side to every word, and in fact, halal could be used to convey. Men establishing a doctrine that leads people to others pretending to be shepherds, the popes.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly what happens in 99.99% of the cases. And so, you know, we stand here realizing that they always take the low road.
I'm going to ask you a question if you're still with us here. Why do you think Hebrew words, so many Hebrew words, have a dark and light side? Halal is a great example. It means to reflect a light, and hallelujah, it's to reflect Yahweh's light, but it's also the first name of Lord Adversary, Lord Satan. Why do you think that Hebrew words have a dark and light side, so many of them?
You're asking me?
Choice.
Yeah.
Or if JB, if he's JB,
oh, I'm sorry.
All the time
I'm
in the chat.
I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. Yeah.
If JB's there, great. If not, then Kirk, take a whack at it.
Well, I would just, because everything has choice. It's,
right.
The whole thing is about choose.
Right. So, for example, anah, the Hebrew word that means to respond and answer, can also mean to afflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you choose to respond and answer to Yahweh's invitation, your soul will not be afflicted. If you ignore his invitations, your soul will be afflicted. In a sense, it'll be debased to nothingness. You know, so... Hebrew words have, many of them have a dark and light side. Yare, Larry's one of your favorites. When Yare is associated with Yahweh, it always means to revere and to respect.
Yeah, it means anybody would want respect, but they don't necessarily want worship. I mean, I'd like to be respected, but boy, I'd hate to come in a room and people fall down on their face.
Oh, I would even hate
my
to
life
walk in a room
would
people
be
fear
like
me.
Hell.
Yeah,
my
would
life
you hate
would
to
be like
be feared?
Hell.
I don't want to be feared. God doesn't want to be feared. Can you imagine being feared by your children? But
you know, I have a note on that that there's a clear differentiates where Yahweh says, you know, all fear of him is just man-made notion.
Yeah, caught by rote by man. Right.
Yeah,
tradition.
And then it says, then the next line, what I put in there is, let's look and see where fear of Yahweh comes from, and. You know, it's Ephraim. Ephraim, he scared everybody in Israel through Lord Baal. You know, you know, he died.
Right.
And there it is. There's the fear. That's where that comes from. The fear comes from Lord Baal, Satan, religion. You know.
So let's do with this word the same thing we just did with Anah. With Anah, if you answer and respond to Yahweh's invitation. Then you, he is going to answer you and respond to you. But if you don't answer and respond, if you choose affliction instead as the meaning, your soul is going to be debased. It's going to cease to exist. Let's look at Yare. If you choose to respect and revere Yahweh, then he will respect and revere you to the point that he's going to bring you right into his family and give you everything. You can't be respected more than being adopted, right?
That's
but
right.
If you fear him, then you're going to have a reason to fear him because you're going to be judged. You'll be terrified because of the consequence of the judgment that will follow. So there is a dark side of Yahreh for the same reason there's a dark side of Anah, for the same reason there's a dark side of Halal. In fact, in Bereshit, in Genesis, in the first chapter, when Yahweh uses the greater and lesser light as signs of his moed, doesn't he speak of the lesser light as something in the darkness?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Does the sun generate light?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And the sun, in that case, from illumination point of view, the concept of generating light is being associated with the greater light, is being associated with the Yahusha to come on the fourth day, because the greater light is going to become visible. So the source of light is going to become visible on the fourth day. That is being equated to Yahusha.
Mm-hmm.
But what about reflected light? Isn't Satan just a reflection of he's a creature of light, but he's not a source of light, is he?
Mm-hmm.
No, he's not. He's just reflecting another light. He's a fraud.
Right. And it's also
now, if I were to tell you what was the single most common name, the most popular name for the moon god in all of the history of pagan religions?
Sin.
Become first worker. Yeah, exactly right. Sin. That's it. That is great.
Isn't that lovely? I mean, the way it plays.
You know, when we teach art, we use reflected light as, in this particular case, it would be moonlight would be cool versus warm light.
Yes. That's right. Reflected light is cooler, and the source of light is warmer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to cozy up to Yahweh's fire.
Sure.
Yeah. Exactly. So, in this passage, where we went about the process of trying to ascertain the meaning of the words, what we found is thus far an affirmation that you can use and should use the letters which comprise the words to define the words. When you do that, you're going to be right all the time. So the sevenfold, the Sheba, by way of affirmation, the sevenfold benefit, the promise, is the word of Yahweh regarding his home, is the leads us to the Father and to Almighty God, provides us with the proper perspective in these things. During the day, Baha Yom, I radiate your light, halal, according to your righteousness and your vindicating, just, fair, and acquitting of the signposts to the doorway to light, tzedak, means used to achieve justice and resolve disputes. We now have a proper definition of mitzvot, because mitzvot is the means to righteousness, tzedak, which is the way that we go about halal, radiating Yahweh's light. Now we have every one of those words. The definition, once again, affirmed that mitzvot isn't judgment. It's the basis upon which good judgment can be exercised and sound decisions can be made regarding that which was designed to achieve justice and resolve disputes. My friend, now mitzvot, the first letter in mitzvot is what?
That'd be a mem.
Right. What does the mem tell us?
Well, that's life-giving, as water, as per...
cleansing and life-giving,
cleansing,
right?
Cleansing, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
The means that Yahweh has designed to resolve disputes, does it have anything to do with providing life and cleansing?
It absolutely washes away everything.
Right, and it washes away our sins so that we might have extended life. So it's... Why would you? Is there any better letter to start that concept with than the mem?
No.
No. The second letter is the sin, the sh, which is the basis, by the way, of this group of words. This whole passage is brought to us by the letter shin, nourishing words, right? So
mm-hmm.
Nourishing words about life and cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
How about the P?
Well, the P is the mouth again. That's the pay.
Right.
So that's the communication language, speaking. Yes, indeed. And then.
And then the last letter is the T, and it can be either the.
Or the,
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the it's Yahweh's signature.
Signature, regularly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it? Yes.
So we have Yahweh's signature on His word, on His communication about those words which are nourishing, that provide cleansing and life, mishpat. And that in turn is the means to be tzedak, which is the signpost on the doorway to light, vindication, which enables us to halal, radiate Yahweh's light by approaching, by walking up, paying attention to, and approaching the shepherd, H-L-L, which we find in Yahweh's promise associated with the seven and Shabbat. And even the concept of the Shabbat is demonstrated in the first letter of Tzedak, which is the person resting and reflecting. Pretty cool. By the way, even the word for vindication has the person who is being vindicated relaxed in the process. In other words, it's telling us that we don't do diddly squat.
No, incapable of.
All right.
I almost think of the word righteous. You know, I every time I hear anything that I normally hear in religious circles, I almost think you could put the realistic person.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're dealing with tzedak, and while it is often translated righteous, may I suggest that you could eliminate the Greek ending, the ous ending.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have with righteous if you remove the Greek ous ending?
Right.
Right.
in the Latin, it means.
Do you have a problem with right, Larry?
No, and I have no problem with realistic either. Is it the realistic person?
Is realistic defined by being right?
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
You know, when you're realistic,
usually,
you're right.
Yeah, you are. I mean, typically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by
yeah,
the way,
yeah,
you know what? Another definition of tzedak is beyond vindicated and not guilty and innocent and right. It's upright.
Upright.
Yeah, upright.
Yeah. Yeah. The upright. The upright. But see, the upright could almost, and I love the upright because there's a picture there. These people aren't on their knees groveling like monkeys. They don't worship me. And you know, it's again, it's realistic.
Yeah.
You know, non-delusional, maybe.
You've used this saying many times, and I particularly like it. You say that Yahweh was the only honest game in town.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, everybody else is cheating. The roulette wheel, the cards are marked, the roulette wheel is weighted. Everybody else is cheating. The only honest game in town. The only place where you're not going to get snake oil, where you're not going to get scammed, where everything that is said you can rely on and you can know for certain is right, and that you'll be right if you accept what he has to say. It's his Torah. It's the only straight game in town. Great and abundant, Rob, is the reconciliation, shalom, for the lovers, la'ahav, those who approach in love your Torah. And to them, it is never a cause to stumble. Wow. So, he is concluding this. These are directly related thoughts. This whole means of reflecting Yahweh's light, of understanding the connection between seven and the Shabbat and the signposts along the way and reflecting Yahweh's light and vindication and the means that Yahweh has designed to resolve disputes, all of that is related, and the derivative is great and abundant is the source of reconciliation, shalom. By the way, you know, shalom doesn't just mean reconciliation. That's its primary meaning. And reconciliation is a really good word because reconciliation is a relational word. There is no there's no meaning associated with reconcile that isn't relationship-oriented. That means that a relationship that was somehow severed, somehow harmed, that whatever it was that was at odds and conflict in that relationship, separating the parties, has been reconciled and resolved. So it is a word that defines being within the family. You've reconciled whatever it was that separated you from God and his family. But it doesn't just
mean
that.
And that Rob is pretty good character there because you got this head thinking about the home. You know, and so, yeah, I know shalom, it means like perfect circumstances, you know, just in a perfect situation.
Right. Yeah, and Rob is the head, observing, paying attention to, thinking about the home. And then shalom doesn't just mean the reconciliation. Shalom speaks of a friendship, of a harmonious relationship with a good friend. That's on my best days. That's how I view. Yeah, well, I view him as a friend. I'm very comfortable saying I like him. We're buds. As an individual, I don't think he minds that at all. Shalom is to approach a friend. It's to enjoy the company of a friend. Pretty inviting stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nothing scary about
comfort
this.
Level.
And La Ahab is those who approach desiring and are fond of what? The Christian New Testament? St. Paul.
Torah.
The Quran.
Torah.
So reconciliation is for those who love the Torah. So when Paul wrote that there is no reconciliation in the Torah, he and Yahweh would disagree.
Yeah, they're definitely at opposing ends of that one.
Georgia said reconciliation, vindication, the means to resolve disputes, and now here reconciliation is a direct result of loving the Torah. And of course, Paul.
Yeah, well, I think it's time to break out the chalk when we start hearing him. I mean, you know, another dead body on the floor,
chalk
it up, you know. I mean, that's all there is to it. I at this stage in the game, with everything that's known about he who is lowly and little, you would think that people would come to their senses, but wow.
Yeah, in fact, I said yesterday on that show, I said, based upon the fact that Yahweh says that his Torah, which means teaching, is the primary source of salvation, that it's the means to have our relationship with him reconciled so we can be part of his family. And since that's what he says about his Torah, and he just affirmed it here, and Paul says that the Torah cannot save and that the Torah is pornography, that you have to be an absolute moron to believe that the person who besmirched the Torah in that way, which Doja said he hates, is speaking for the very God who authored the Torah. It's an impossibility.
That's,
you have to be irrational.
I think that's one of the big reasons that Christians try to stay out of what they call their Old Testament.
Yeah.
Because even as corrupt as it is, and it's bad news, I wouldn't suggest anybody read one on an English-based Biblia, but I will say this, even a moron, if they really looked at it and worked it out in their mind, knows that Paul is in opposition to the creator of the universe.
Correct. And yet he claims to speak for him. And under that basis, he is absolutely lying.
Well, even under the basis, and I've said this before, but I want to point it out again. You know, we have these phenomenal names, you know, Eliyah, Daniel, Zechariah, Yashaya.
Yeah.
You know, all these names that are giving credit to Yahweh.
Even Moshe, you know, to draw out. Even Aaron, enlightened free will. These are great
Abraham.
Names. Yeah,
you know,
Abraham,
these are all
merciful and enriching father. Sarah, to endure. Yisrael, individuals who engage and endure with God.
Right. And then all of a sudden you get this name that says, I'm a worm.
You know, I know.
This should scream out at you. Yeah. Whoa, wait a minute. Who named you this? You know, because he didn't say he took the. He was renamed that. Right.
Right. Right. That, oh, no, he chose it.
Yeah,
he chose that name. You know, and when Yosha said, the sad thing that really breaks my heart is I came in my father's name and you have not accepted me, and yet one will come in his own name and him you will accept. He chose, the Latin. He chose the Roman name.
I'm a worm.
Oh, yeah. He is the only candidate in the world that chose his own name that had nothing to do with God, that had to do with that perverted mountain with the sin, the moon god. He's the pervert that chose his own name.
It's Amun Ra Atwar, and of course Atwar is also Ishtar.
Yeah.
So they're big time in the land of Petra. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is.
Now, I personally think that is as despicable as Paul is, and as obvious it is that Paul lied, and that you have to be ignorant and irrational to be a Christian, because the entire religion of Christianity is entirely based on Paul. As I told the radio host Louis Free, that you can't, if you're have any interest in the fellow named Yosha, because there was no Jesus, there was no Christ. Christ isn't a name, Jesus isn't a name of anybody associated with God. And if you know who Yosha is, you know that he was Torah observant, which means if you're going to follow him, you're going to be Torah observant. If you're Torah observant, you can't be a Christian. And so you have to be an idiot, a complete moron, to be a Christian. I think it behooves us to constantly expose and condemn Christianity and Paul. What did Doe just tell us? Didn't he tell us, say, I hate it?
Said he hate it.
Right.
Hate it.
Yeah, hey, by the way, can you email me a link to that, to Louis Free's show from today? Do you have anything?
Yeah, I will. I'll find a link to it.
I'll put it out there on FB.
Yeah, it was yesterday's show, but it was one of my favorites because we covered so much territory. And you know, it's a nationally syndicated show to say you have to be a moron to be a Christian because of that simplistic concept. And to recognize how important it is to realize that Paul contradicted Yahweh. You can't speak for God if you're contradicting him.
Did anybody call in when you were on the show?
No, because of the fact that Louis Free's show runs the 4 hours. The last 2 hours are the 2 hours I do Shattering Myths, which means that it also runs the 2 hours before Shattering Myths. You and I are currently on the West Coast. I'm moving back to the East Coast. But right now, I'm on the West Coast. And the show starts at 7 on the West Coast.
In the morning?
Yeah, 7. So I get up at 5:30. But do you think that I want to do a show between 5 and 7 in the morning? No.
I'm sure.
So I've told him I will entertain questions from his callers and participate in a regular show with him, which I've done in the past. But only when I move to the East Coast, because I don't like having to I get up 5:30. I get up 5:30 to exercise. That's, you know, my time of the day. So I get up to exercise, and then I prepare for the Shattering Myths show. I don't want to be on an interview. And one of the things that I've talked he's talked to me about, he says, you know, the biggest pushback that he gets on me is the fact that I'm critical of Islam without being also critical of Christianity. And back at the time that I originally did his show, I was not critical of Christianity. I was critical of Islam. And so I said, we're going to...
Well, you certainly were when I heard you on a radio show.
It didn't take me long to be critical of Christianity, but not at the very beginning. And now I'm, you know, an equal opportunity hater. And
that's good for you.
What Doe did. It's what we ought to do. And, you know, it's bashing Paul is the right thing to do. When Yahweh calls him the plague of death, I think that's probably bashing him. Hey, but I would ask you, you guys have all studied the Torah prophets and Psalms, and you know the people who spoke for Yahweh, including Dode here. I would like to you to tell me how many of them claim to have been demon-possessed.
Zero.
That's easy.
That's I thought it was like 50%. You know that? You're kidding me, right? Zero? Falling out over
Abram
here.
Abram didn't. Moshe didn't. Noah never did. Yeah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, none of them ever did.
Okay, so this, in Psalm 119, 165, after he says, great and abundant, Rob, which means that the family home is available to those who are observant, is the reconciliation, the shalom, which is the word of God, S-H, leads us to the shepherd who protects and empowers as well as cleanses and provides life. That's shalom. Those are what the letters convey. For the lovers of your Torah, and to them it is never a cause to stumble. If the Torah was full of things that you could not do, would that cause you to stumble?
Oh, you betcha.
You betcha. If the Torah is a bunch of restrictions that provide limits to you, that tell you can't walk there, would that be a cause of stumbling?
Mm-hmm. Sure
would. If the Torah wasn't a straight path, if there was lots of circuitous things that you had to navigate, wouldn't that be a cause of stumbling?
You would stumble, you'd be frustrated, you'd give up.
Right. When you're in the light, and the light is brilliant, and your eyesight is focused, and you're paying attention, and you understand that everything in this Torah is to guide you, when you're properly guided in the light, with your eyes open and focused, are you going to stumble?
Not likely.
Not likely. Not ever. You're never going to stumble when the light is perfect, when the guidance is perfect, and when your eyes are open and you're focused on where you're going and you're following the best possible guidance to the best possible place, you are never going to stumble. So, if you want to keep from stumbling, by the way, when you stumble, which way do you go?
You fall down on your
right.
face.
Right. Right, which is the opposite of being upright, being tzedak, right? So you're either tzedak or you're stumbling. But he says in the Torah, there is no stumbling. The person who is stumbling is down on their knees, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you make a great point. If Torah was, a bunch of things you couldn't do, and you had to do them, but there's no way you could do them, that
you'd
would
stumble.
Be a big stumbling block. That would be
stumble.
A huge stumbling block.
Right.
When
you fail to accomplish something, if you set out to achieve something and you fail to do it, you'd say that I stumbled along the way. Right? But we don't have to achieve anything. Now the other thing that's interesting is that it's stumble is negated here. So there is no stumbling and there is never a cause to stumble. Stumble is negated by ain. It never serves as a stumbling block. So since to stumble is to fall down either on your knees or prostrate, is there any other way to stumble but to fall down on your knees or prostrate? You fall down on your knees or your face, right, when you stumble?
Oh, you could fall on your ass, I suppose.
Okay, well, you could fall on your behind. But most people that are walking
still
forward
on the ground.
aren't going to stumble backwards. They're going to stumble forward. You're going to be on your knees or your face. You're going to be prostrate or bowed down, correct?
Yeah.
Didn't Doe just tell us that in the Torah there is none of that? So in the Torah, you can't be on your face, you can't be on your knees. There's no stumbling down on your knees or on your face.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, everything in Yahweh's words work perfectly. You know, it's, I tell people, and there's always people in the group coming in, you know, our group's always getting a little bigger, where they feel inadequate, during the called out days. I mean, I feel inadequate. I really do sometimes. I feel like, wow, there's so little for me to do here. I mean, I have to accept this gift. I mean, especially when I do like a wave offering, you know, I do is put olive oil and wine on a matzah and wave it, you know. outside. I really do. I really do that. But, you know, I'm just responding. And that's pretty much all I got to do, I suppose.
Yeah, it's nice to reinforce the symbols, though. You know, Kirk,
yes,
I know you you took the residual part of your lamb and you put it on the grill, and to the extent that the grill would incinerate the rest of it. It's just reinforcing. It says, "Hey, oh, you know, I got the message. Yeah, I understood what you're trying to say." You know, and we put the bitter herbs in that olive oil, and you understand what Yosha had to endure, what God had to endure to walk the walk, to enable.
Yeah, that it was bittersweet.
This.
Yeah, right. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that too, but it just seems like we're woefully inadequate, and it's because we are.
Yeah, we are.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have never felt in a celebration of Pesach Matzah B'Kurim like what I was doing was adequate. Never.
No. Yeah, and that's how people feel when they walk into it, and it's just reassuring to know that I guess we're all inadequate, and
yeah.
You know, if Yahweh wouldn't deal with inadequate people, he'd have nobody to talk to.
Was Dode adequate, or was he imperfect, flawed?
Well, he was imperfect. Everybody's imperfect,
yeah.
Of course.
How about old Abraham? You know, Abraham, even after Yahweh told Abraham everything he was going to inherit,
he didn't even believe it. Yeah,
he didn't understand it. He says, "I don't get it. I don't have a kid. What am I going to inherit?" And then Yahweh had to take him because he wasn't the brightest tool in the shed, was he?
Well, no,
Sonny, you don't have to
not.
Be brilliant. You don't have to be brilliant.
You have to be realistic. That's another thing.
By the way, Abraham was being realistic. He says, "Look, I'm being real here with you. I don't have a kid, and I'm 100 years old. What good is an inheritance to a guy that's 100 years old that doesn't have a kid? I don't get it." He was being real, and Yahweh said, "Okay, let me show you." Ooh, okay.
Yeah, a religious boob probably would have jumped
right
on.
He was
right
a guy that had more flaws and then he had hairs on his head to teach us how to observe the Torah. And you can't come up with a better person to tell you that it's not about obeying the Torah because Dode didn't obey it. But he sure
just
understood it.
You know, but there is that feeling, and I just like to get it out there, I mean, for everybody. We're all woefully inadequate. I'm inadequate. Everybody's inadequate, and if we don't accept that the gift, I mean, so what? I'm an inadequate guy that got a gift. I mean, that's kind of how we got to look at it.
Four times during yesterday's show with Louis Free, he tried to tell me, you know, how much he admired me and how much he thought I was courageous, and so I said, "Let's." I'm going to spend the next 15 minutes, and we're going to get away with do away with both of those concepts. I don't ever want to be admired. I think of myself as inadequate, a flawed implement. I mean, all I'm bringing to the equation here is that I had the time to do a lot of research on topics that are really important to people, and I learned a lot, and I enjoy sharing what I learned. That doesn't make me admirable. And admirable is a very bad thing. The moment you think that you're adequate, beyond adequate, that you're admirable, then you become useless because you get caught up in your own acclaim.
That's kind of the definition of humble. We don't use our words. We use Yahweh's words. We don't share our own words.
Right.
We share Yahweh's words that count. We might explain those words.
That's why I told him. I said, when Moshe was asked by Yahweh, to lead his children away from the crucible, what did he say? Did he say, "Great, I'm the best guy you could possibly pick for that job. I've got all the qualifications you're looking for.
Why are you choosing me?"
I understand why you're choosing me. I'm really qualified. No, he just said, "I'm not qualified. I don't even speak very well. My tongue is thick."
Which is why he got the job.
That's why he got the job. Why do you think Dode was chosen to represent how to observe the Torah? Because he was flawed.
Yeah, he was not a religious man, not in any way.
So we're getting right back to your point. We're all inadequate. It's our inadequacies that cause us to be reliant on Yahweh. That's what he wants. Do you think a child is adequate in providing their home? Is a child adequate in providing their food? Is a child adequate in providing their shelter? Is a child adequate in providing their own guidance and teaching?
Good point.
No,
good
point. Of course not. Yeah. But the father is.
You know, I just one more thing I just want to throw up there, and anybody feel free to chime in there. You know, you look at Abraham, and Yahweh, you know, introduces himself and tells him who he is, and of course, Abraham believed it. I mean, and the first thing he did was fell on his face, as we know. And Yahweh said, you know, pick yourself up. This is an eye-to-eye thing. So,
exactly.
And,
don't do that.
And, I really have to wonder, was that the first person he ever approached? And my guess is,
I don't know.
Probably not.
We don't know.
I think other people just turned him down. I know we don't know it. But, I mean, just based on people that accept what's real.
Yahusha, you know, approached the wealthy man, and he turned him down. So it's not unthinkable, certainly.
No, of course not. Yahweh directly approached all the children of Israel to take them away from the crucible. And you know, 50 days into the journey, they were worshiping the golden bull, you know, back in Egypt mindset. Oh, it happens all the time. Don't you think that the story is nothing but an invitation to embrace Yahweh, and don't virtually everyone turn it down?
Yeah, basically that's right. I have a feeling he probably approached a lot of people.
Yeah, he might
and
have.
They just... You know,
but, you know, Yahweh does have, my good friend, Yahweh has an ability we will one day have that we do not have currently, and that Yahweh is outside of the fourth dimension. And we are stuck in a three-dimensional construct. And so Yahweh, as beyond the fourth dimension, he knows what people's response is going to be to his invitation. So he knows in advance how someone's going to respond to his invitation.
And clearly Abraham responded correctly, and we get the most out of Abraham's response.
Yeah, he picked one person.
Sure,
you know, he got
true.
A whole earth here, a whole planet, and he picked one person to convey his covenant to.
Got to be a reason for that.
Yeah, did he pick? He says, you know, I think what I want to do is establish a movement here. I want to establish a congregation. So let's, you know, I'm God. Why would I want to waste my time with a single individual?
Right.
Let's convert.
That would be the way men think. But
I want to pick a place where everybody agrees to follow me, and I'll set that as an example in Ur. Or did God say, you know, this is about you and me? Just you and I'm going to do all of this if it were just you. Is that what is being conveyed here? This is a one-on-one friendship with Yahweh and being part of his family. And yeah, he didn't pick a city.
That's a thoughtful response.
He could have went to the high priest of the biggest religion in Ur, you know, done some few miracles and probably converted the entire city to following him if that was what he wanted.
What if he went to the king? You know?
Yeah. Could have mandated it.
Right. But he didn't, did he? As a matter of fact, he even began this by saying, oh, by the way, the first thing you're going to have to do is walk away from your country. So he excluded the king. He excluded country. So it's not just that he picked
first
one person.
First, you got to leave all this behind.
Right. He not only picked one person, he excluded all forms of association, all forms of institutional groupings. And did he say, you know, it's going to be dangerous along the way. I think we need a military to protect us. You know, it's going to be expensive along the way. Maybe we need somebody with a lot of money to go with us. You know, we want to be respected along the way, and we want to have a lot of people on the way, so let's take the king. I want you to stay in line along the way, so let's take the religious leaders. No, one guy. One guy who wasn't...
Even me.
Yeah, who wasn't rich, who wasn't empowered, who wasn't political, who wasn't religious, who wasn't militaristic, just one guy. That was enough. That's all he wanted. I'm going to establblish this relationship with one guy. And then
that means
he turned
too,
that one guy into
kind
a family.
Of relationship. Yeah, but it also means it's a different kind of relationship right off the bat. You know, a group.
Who was the first child of that relationship, Larry?
Yitzhak.
Yeah.
Laughter. Different kind of relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you don't sit around and laugh with religious deities, you know. They're
Would you laugh in the face of somebody you fear?
No.
If Yahweh approached Abraham and Sarah as a fearsome deity that wanted to be worshipped, is there any chance whatsoever that Sarah would have laughed at him? She wasn't laughing with him. She laughed at him. Would Sarah have laughed at him?
No, not a chance.
No, and if God didn't want to be laughed at, what would he have done to Sarah?
He would have thrown a lightning bolt at
her.
Right. So did Abraham say anything mean to Sarah? Did he say, you know, I'll show you. You laugh at me and you're toast. No, did he say? I'm cool with being laughed at. That's okay. It's okay. I want laughter. I'm encouraging laughter. As a matter of fact, I'm going to help you conceive a son, and his name is going to be Laughter. That's exactly what I'm trying to foster. I want you so comfortable with me that you're willing to laugh at me, not just laugh with me. Can you imagine laughing at God? Will you say, what were you thinking when you created the platypus?
Yeah, I hear you. You know, last night, Yalda and I drove down to, and Shaggy, our sister, drove down to Daytona Beach to meet with Dwayne and Dawn. And, you know, we'd never met them, but this was on, you know, Dwayne's a member of Unpopular Truth, and Don's a emergency room doctor.
Okay.
And, you know, we come in and sit down, you know how, I mean, we really had a good time. Why?
Uh-huh.
Everybody was laughing.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't sit down and have a religious
meeting. It wasn't
a
religious meeting. There was nobody. Were you trying to impress them at any time?
No. And they weren't trying to impress us. We went down there to have a good time, and we did have a good time.
Right.
I mean,
and did anyone of the three of you say, you know, my credentials are really rocking? I mean, I've got the credentials. I've got the goods here, so.
No.
I want you to admire me.
No, everybody was pretty laid back, you know.
Approachable.
You know, nobody was.
Having a good time.
We
exactly.
had Passover. We had a nice group of people. We had a good meal. We had a good discussion. Everyone relaxed and laughed.
Yeah.
Had a good time.
Yeah, you had my son. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, we always love having Blake. He's great.
Yeah, my son is absolutely unequivocally in the covenant. And there is just no question about it. He has not a second for religion. He is anti-religious, and he loves the covenant. So,
yeah, that's,
I know
that's strong. You know, most people when they listen to Yahweh's words, change into a phony. You know, because if you put your religious hat on, you're all of a sudden not real anymore. You know
Correct.
What I'm saying here?
Or you put a credentialed hat on that I'm credible, that I have, you say, if you infer that you have credentials that would impress someone.
Well, that too. Either or.
Yeah.
It doesn't
matter. Either or. Yeah. Goodbye.
The only people that I know of that are godlike are these politicians and movie stars. And that's because you don't know them, and they hire PR firms, as you know, to make themselves something that they're not.
Right. Well, let me give you a great example. And Shattering Myths these last few weeks, it's been co-hosted by Kirk. And I want to tell you, these programs have been much, much better than I would ever be able to do them on my own. And I get far more emailed people thinking that Kirk's wonderful and they're learning from him than I've ever gotten on myself. And I'm going to tell you, I'm thrilled by it. Just thrilled. To share in it is a thrill. And Larry, yes, the last time we did the Shabbat program, you weren't with us. And it was
right.
flat.
Yeah.
It was flat.
Yeah, well, I try.
It was flat.
I was getting into grilling.
You bring a sense of energy, of passion, of enthusiasm. You're real. I think that energy
here,
is... Yeah, it's what it was.
Saul's a good man. Lowly and little. That's because he's humble. Get what I'm saying there, fella? Do ya?
I like that anyway.
It's William.
Yeah, hi, William.
Yeah.
In fact, William, you have one of the least pretentious approaches and attitudes. You know,
Thank you.
You're not pretentious, we can laugh, we can have fun. No one's trying to impress anybody. That is the that's the nature of this family. There is no hierarchy in this family. How
are
you doing there, Willie?
I'm good. How's everybody doing tonight?
I'm really having a great time. This is fun. I have particularly had a great time as we have spent more time learning from our resident artist as to what the letters convey in the words. So we're doing a lot more of that, and the more we do of that, the happier I am, because it really works.
Yeah, no, it's really cool listening to Kurt on SM.
Yeah.
Real cool.
Yeah.
Learning a lot, that's for sure.
Do you have a good Pesach Matzah and Makotam with your family, Willie?
Yes. Actually, we're celebrating till tomorrow evening. So, yeah, it's been great.
Okay.
It's been great.
Okay.
Yep.
Were observational where some of us were astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
I went observational because in Florida it was the full moon then, and I just did it from a Florida perspective this time. But I do actually, I do it 8 days because I look at Pesach as a separate issue from matzah, and I just do 7 days of matzah, so...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm still doing matzah because I like it.
Well, you like to eat matzah. I like to eat
it. I do. I like
now.
It.
I
like the symbolism of it. Every time I take a bite of matzah, I think of the symbolism of it. I enjoy the symbolism. I like the taste of it. I love lamb. I had lamb again last night, and I had matzah. I like it.
Do you look at it as an eight-day event?
I look at it as a seven-day event, and I have total respect for those who look at it as an eight-day event. No, I look at it personally. It resonates more effectively for me of it being a seven-day event that leads to the eight-day event, with the Sukkah being the eight-day event, and I celebrate matzah starting on Pesach. So it's seven days of matzah because I celebrate matzah beginning on Pesach. That's what resonates.
Well, I start eating it then on Pesach.
Yeah, that's what
resonates
with me, and yet. I'm going to tell you that I understand the symbolism of matzah itself being 7 days. So it all depends on whether or not you look at the first day of matzah, whether or not it's on Pesach or the next day after Pesach. I look at the first day of matzah. I look at the whole festival as matzah, with Pesach being the doorway to having your soul defungused. And so that's how I look at it. But, you know, this is one of those places where I not only don't disagree with others that hold your view or that hold James's view, I celebrate it. I think it's great.
I understand it the same way you do, Yada. I also look at the fact that it's 3 days. I see the Ruach in there. You know, I see her. I see Yahusha. I see Yahweh. And then I think of the 7 days, and then I think about how Yah is one, right? So they all come together to do one thing, and that's to help us
get
home.
Well, that's true.
So.
Yeah, and that's why I like the 8 day associated with Sukkah, because it says, okay, once we've entered Yahweh's home, then we start anew with a new forever. So I think symbolically it
represents Yah well, you know.
Yeah, I think it does too. But this is one of those places where I really revel in. I mean, I love the fact that there's three of us now, the four of us that are talking here, that three of the four of us have a different perspective on these that resonates with them, because what that tells me is that this is not about being an adequate doer of this, but instead a celebrant of what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
means
we were
the same
talking
thing
about this
each of us. We just put the symbolism
earlier
a little different way.
Yeah, we were talking about this in the chat room earlier. You know, the rabbis took this where yeah, they take where you have a debate like this, where we can all have differences and we can all support our differences with the Torah, and that's
right.
where they went into debate mode and rabbi mode, and they were like, okay, well, let's debate this. All right, this means this, and this is what everyone now has to believe, and that's
right.
how they created their religion. Yah didn't mean for that.
No,
he meant for
no.
us to do exactly what we're doing here and now, discussing,
yeah.
differing.
You know,
why do we
personally,
differ?
I
we're
hope
learning.
That that Larry and JB, who have different views of it than I do, and different from one another, I hope and I expect and I think that you're both right.
And here's
but
the
I don't
thing,
think,
seven,
but
eight,
I don't think
days.
I'm wrong. You know, that's
yeah,
one of the. I don't think I'm wrong, and I think you're both right.
But
yeah,
well,
it's
let's
just
say
one
we,
of those
let's
things.
Say we're wrong.
Just
seven,
look,
8, 9 days. So what? Right?
So what? I just
we're doing
look at it.
It.
He
like,
yeah,
God, just keep going.
Right.
Matzah on a different day, and it starts on the 15th for 7 days. You eat matzah, so that's how I do it. That's where
yeah.
I'm coming from. On
yeah,
it, you know, but
that's a very
that
literal.
Doesn't mean it's right.
No, that's a that is the most literal adaptation of that instruction. That is the most literal adaptation of that instruction. And in my case, I do a contemplative, because that's just my whole thing. You know, we're all wired a little different. I very seldom do what I know. I respond to what I understand. And since Yahweh said that we eat matzah on Pesach, I view that as part of Pesach, and therefore I have matzah beginning on Pesach and being celebrated. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is a celebration of matzah. And so that's a thoughtful interpretation where, Larry, you've just said, that's what the words say. I'm going to do what the words say. Yeah, because
I've said before, you know, as far as us doing anything, you know, we're stumbling around through the Moed.
I wasn't meaning doing in the sense of being obedient.
I'm talking about the Mikra, the Bikra, are all about engaging.
They're about answering the invitation. There's a doing here. Absolutely, there's a doing.
Yeah,
you can't answer the invitation
doing.
Unless you do something.
Yes. Yeah, unless you answer it. But
I'm
just saying,
right.
You know, when people start talking about doing the Torah, this is what I'm talking, the overall doing the Torah thing. I've always said, you know, we have a hard enough time stumbling through the Moed. I mean, just getting that much of it together.
Don't you just enjoy the symbols? I mean, I just like to do that stuff. I mean, it's not because I'm doing something.
I enjoy the symbols. Yeah, I do too.
I like
that. That's my celebration. I enjoy the symbols.
Yeah.
And in this particular time, and I'm going to not stay any longer, and that my wife is with me here, and I'm going to rather than going out to dinner, we're going to go fix dinner tonight. I'm going to have a piece of barbecued salmon this evening, but all of the symbolism of Sorcha was part of what I celebrated. But this year, the thing that I celebrated the most was just being a useful part of the family, knowing how flawed I am, and I celebrated being used, which is exactly what's happening to all of us, celebrating being used. That was really cool to me. First time I've ever done that. It's just, you know, I just want to celebrate being used. Gosh, you know how much more fun it is to be useful?
Yeah.
You know, my eldest son
that's a way
and his
to look
wife
at it.
Are expecting their first child. For the first time, we're going to be grandparents. We're selling a home in California, taking a significant loss because the possessions and the money mean nothing. But to be useful as grandparents to our son and daughter-in-law as they bring this child into the world, being useful, it brings value. I like being useful. I don't want to be, I don't want to be a parasite. I want to be useful. Being useful is fun. It's what brings value.
Yeah. Terrific. Congratulations, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I'm going to run. You guys can continue, but I do need to go so I can do as I promised with my wife.
Yes.
I'm out too. I had a great time tonight.
Appreciate
it. It was enjoyable.
Enjoyed it.
There.
Yeah. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you, JB.
Take
thank you,
guys.
Bye.
Thank you, William.
Bye.
Talk to you next week.
Thank you.